Hey, welcome everyone back for the second episode of the No Illusions podcast. We're going to have a few more guests with us today. We're going to have Drew Lane, who was with us the first time. And also we're going to add Chris Lane, who has been teaching for a while. And I'm going to go ahead and let her introduce herself.
I'm Chris Lane. I've been teaching for 21 years, taught special ed for 11 years in Fairfax, Pulaski, and Williamsburg. And then been teaching English, high school English, for the past 10 years in West Point.
On our last podcast, we kind of talked about what it meant for teachers to get away during the summer and take that time to recharge and kind of not feeling guilty about that process of not being invested 12 months out of the year. And we thought it was important to get that out there and make sure teachers felt that people understood what it meant. You know, you need that time to recharge. But you know, here we are now, everyone's back in school. We wanted to take this time to talk about what it meant, you know, that first week or first week and a half, how we focused on building relationships, you know, with the students coming back and with administrators, even with the faculty coming back. You know, some administrators feel that first week back is going to be, hey, we're going to have faculty meetings at this time and we're going to talk about policies. We're going to talk about changes on the policy manuals and we're going to go, you know, strictly by the book. And it's not really what it should be. I think you should take the time as an administrator to really do some type of relationship building with your faculty, do some type of team building activities instead of just saying, this is our policies and this is what the day is going to look like the first day.
And give them more time back in the classroom. I think a lot of times
we
focus on, we've got 2 weeks with these teachers and the majority of the time in these meetings, you know, constantly talking about the new focus for this year. And to a lot of these teachers, especially some of your veteran teachers, they end up saying, oh, here we go. Here's the focus for this year that we're going to forget about next year. We'll forget about after 90 days or forget about whatever.
Some new initiative that nobody's ever going to check to see if we did anything with it.
Yeah. And they always feel like, here comes the new admin team just checking a box.
Yeah, well, that's what it is a lot of times. But the other part of it's kind of funny is that when you hear administrators now, the new thing is, you know, how do we get kids excited to come back to school? And that talks about, you know, those first week, we're going to build relationships, we're going to do fun activities. But then those same administrators have faculty members come back and it's all about meetings. And it's all about, you know, professional development that they didn't have a voice in even setting up. Most of the teachers are uninterested or, not engaged through that whole process. So it's kind of almost hypocritical in a way to want to hold the faculty to one standard when they're dealing with kids and then not holding ourselves to that same standard when we're dealing with the faculty. Go ahead.
Yeah. Where I'm at this year, I think we've really spent a lot of time in our smaller admin meetings talking about how are we going to give our teachers back more time. And one of the things we did is we're pretty much going to eliminate as many of the faculty meetings as possible. If we have to use faculty meeting time, we're going to use it in some type of self-professional development where core teachers or curriculum teachers can come in and just say, okay, this is what we want to study. This is what we want to get better at. Instead of having a faculty meeting and anything that can be given to teachers that as far as like rules and regulations or information that can just be given out in a memo, then that's what we're going to do. We're going to give it back to them that way and then use faculty meeting time if we're going to use it in some type of professional development capacity or give those teachers just that time back.
Well, we have a teacher here. So, Chris, what do you do first week of school? How do you get to know your kids or how do you build relationships with them?
Why didn't she talk about
my 2 weeks?
The first 2 weeks before kids come back what's important to her?
Our school actually went the opposite direction of Drew's school. This is probably the first year where I'm at. The teachers were given less classroom time, which was very frustrating. So a lot of us came in even before the 2 weeks, stayed all day or stayed longer and to work on what we really wanted to work on, you know, what we went to teaching for, to be in the classroom and setting our classroom up and planning or working on the weekend. So we did have way less classroom time, which probably frustrated a lot of the teachers this year.
It's stressful.
It's very stressful. And going into the first week, the stress carried over because we had a hard time focusing on our students.
So what were you doing? Just an example of a typical day during those first 2 weeks.
We had a lot of PDs and PLCs. We had a summer assignment. We had to read a book and do some homework, and we had to meet for that. We had to meet for two different PDs, which they were all day long. We had team building, which was nice. I mean, we went bowling and ate lunch together. Yeah.
The whole group?
It's nice.
How the faculty respond to that?
I think we were appreciative, and we thought it was nice. It was nice to, because of the first year that we're combined middle school, high school now, and we realized, you know, it was nice to get together and realize that to work together. It was nice to, you know, get to know the middle school teachers better. But at the same time, there were a few of us, the lot of us said this was nice, but it would have been nice if we did this later in the week after we had been able to work in our classrooms. We knew, looking at the schedule, the first week of the teacher schedule, we had not 1 minute of classroom time.
Would you say, probably an interesting point, would you say that, so the ones that felt they should be in a classroom more, were those more veteran teachers, or did the younger teachers enjoy the bowling more than you think the veteran teachers, or was it vice versa?
I think actually it was mutual. I think we all the new teachers were extremely stressed out because I think they didn't know where, they were nervous about not seeing any classroom time.
Would it have worked better if
we could do it
they had something on the schedule?
It was the first day.
And then they removed it from the schedule and took you bowling. You know what I mean?
Like if you had a PD scheduled all day and then you showed up and then, oh no, we're not doing PD day, we're going bowling. Would that have been, you'd have felt better about that than maybe?
Maybe.
Or if the schedule on the calendar wasn't booked for 2 weeks straight, solid.
Yeah, and I think they felt that, I mean, on the second week we had one or two days had some classroom time, but it was like 2 hours one day after, you know, doing a PD or PLC and an hour a day. But then they threw, in the middle of the second week, we had open house. We had to work from 11 to 7. And we had to have everything ready by that Wednesday.
And that kind
so we didn't have any. Even my husband, you know, said that I was ridiculous, and I went in on my own time. Probably worked from eight in the morning till six in the evening in the classroom before teachers went back. And there were other teachers doing the same thing because we looked at the schedule and we knew there was no way we could be ready for it by that Wednesday.
And the whole point is to be ready for the kids the first
right.
day.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the whole point of what we're doing. So we talked about last podcast kind of taking stuff off of teachers' plates instead of just adding more and more and more to what they're doing, especially before school.
Yeah.
Because that's the toughest piece of it. That kind of touches back on what we said last podcast about if you're really, and administrators, if you really say, you'll hear people say they're student-centered, they're student-driven, they're administrators, or they're student-driven leaders. But if you're really student-driven, you're teacher-driven, which means you're putting those teachers first and you're taking stuff off their plate because at the end of the day, they're the ones in the classroom. They're the ones doing that. They're having their daily grind with students. So if you're really going to be student-driven, you need to make sure you're supporting teachers in a way where you're not adding more stress to what's already an extremely stressful position to begin with.
I always want people who basically make decisions, educational decisions in the classroom, in anywhere in the building, on what they believe is in the best interest of kids. And if you are a good administrator, and what's in the best interest of kids is getting teachers to be prepared for those kids when they walk in the door that first day, having something fun and engaging, and you're taking all their time away, and then the last day you're like, all right, you got a whole day in your classroom, they're rushed, then that first day when those kids come back, they're just not prepared.
For 120 kids to come back.
Yeah, for
120 kids in 6 hours.
Yeah. And so you feel rushed, you increase the stress of those teachers, and they really need they need that time. I know there's meetings that have to happen, but if you spread them out and give teachers a little bit of time every day, or give them Tuesday and Thursday a full day where you're not bothering them at all, then that last day, you know, they don't feel like they got to come in on that Saturday. I know we opened up the doors on Saturday and Sunday because teachers want to come back in and get stuff ready. Well, they shouldn't feel like they got to come in back on Saturday and Sunday because you monopolized all their time for the past 2 weeks. So, you know, if you really, as an administrator, want to do what's in the best interest of kids, then you need to do what's in the best interest of your teachers and give them their time back so they can prepare to do what they believe is in the best interest of their kids.
Because you hired them as professionals to do a job.
Absolutely.
And if you're taking over all their time, you're not allowing them to do what you hired them for. But, you know, at first, like we said, you know, getting back to what we were first originally talked about, that first week's so huge to making kids excited to come back to school. So Chris, for example, you're in the class, you know, you're still in the classroom. So, like, when you get your schedule, what do you think, you know, that first week, how do you build relationships? What's one thing you do?
Well, I'm lucky in the sense that I'm in a small school, so I do have most of these students for 2 years in a row, and that does help. It does help because most of us teachers, we are out in the hallway. We all have good rapport with our students, even from the past. So, for newer students or newer students to me is to see. Older students already have a relationship with me out in the hallway, us being out there, speaking to them. That does help and that does carry into the classroom. I used to, for the first day of school, I used to do activity. I would tell them, you know, I'm told that I've got to give you a syllabus on the first day. So here's the syllabus, but we'll go over it later this week. And I used to team building activities and offer them extra credit for the team to, you know, whichever team wins. And then they had to work together in a group and then I'd walk around, take pictures and talk to them. This year, I wanted to try something that I have a hard time with that I wanted to try to bring into the classroom and keep working on it. And I always have a hard time with their stations because it's so unstructured.
I lose control, and
I don't like that. And it still was tough.
Which is sometimes okay.
It is, yeah. And I got to get used to that. And it's a controlled chaos. So I did stations where one station had to look through the syllabus by doing a little syllabus scavenger hunt. Another station where they had to go through some grammar editing that we usually talk about. Another station had to make a little about me sheet. Which I made one for myself, so they got to read one about me to get to know me a little bit better. And I really did enjoy reading. I think they did too. You know, just even coloring the about me, I got to read theirs, and they shared a lot about themselves through that, and I was surprised. And then just other little stations, introductory stations, and I liked it. And the other way that I think I built relationships during the first week, I needed a writing sample from all my students. So what I always do is they have to write a future letter to themselves, and I explain to them that I send these letters every year, 2 years after they graduate. Transition. 2 years after they graduate, I find them, somehow find them through Facebook or social media or friends, and you know, get their address wherever they meet a baby. And I told them that even this past summer, I sent it to somebody all the way in Japan because they're overseas, and somebody in Florida. And it's really neat to get in contact. And the students really enjoy getting these letters. And you guys will enjoy getting these letters as well. But reading these letters, I tell them, I do have to read your letters. I'm using this as a writing sample. Don't worry about your writing style. I just wanted to check it out. And I think it's their way to let me know who they are because they're pretty honest, and that's how I get to know them. And I also do another way I realized that I start getting build relationship and get to know them through is we started doing a book tasting. I'm really a big proponent on reading, and I have a huge classroom library, and some kids are already drawn to that, and so we talk about books. But
free reading's important.
Free reading,
like unstructured reading. I mean, that's a big. And Michigan, was it University of Michigan or somebody just had a big study about just how free read is so
allow
increases
them to
achievement
read.
And increases reading awareness, and I mean it does all kinds of stuff. But
and just to allow them to read whatever they want to read and whatever level they are. But having this book tasting, I got to know even more of my students. Even this time around, quieter students were willing to talk to me and tell me what their interests are and what they were looking for. And
you gave them a different way to
express. It was a different way to express themselves, and it was neat. We just did this past Friday, and I got to know more kids.
Well, for those people that might not know what that is, can you give them a quick, like, 2-minute rundown on what a book tasting is? What are kids going to experience?
The librarian and I wanted to, figure out a way to get, and I think other schools have done this, and we got all these different ideas from just different social media or different sites, but we set up the library in restaurant style, and then we pretty much geek it out, you know, through reservations and... It was cute. The kids got into it, asking for ketchup and coffee. But on each of their tables are books that are wrapped up. That we specifically pick certain books we know that they're going to, we hope they like different genres and everything. And it's good that the librarian and I, we've read a lot of these books, so we can figure out which is good for which kid. But they taste or... read the books for each, pick a book, read for 5 minutes, about 5 of the books. They write on their placemats, their interests, or how they felt about the book. Probably the last 2 rounds is where they start talking to us and telling us what they're interested in, and we can figure out which book would be best for them. And that's how we get to know them. But the kids are excited and not as intimidated when they find out that I'm going to require independent reading every day, all year long. And they like knowing that they're interested in the same books that I am or the librarian, and they can sit and talk to us about it.
It gives you another way to build a relationship too. Yeah, because they can feel comfortable talking to you about something other than, you know, something that, yeah, anything.
School.
Not always that I'm the teacher, you're the student type thing. I thought you said 2 important things. One thing you said, you said it without saying it, was that you had to give a syllabus, but you found a creative way to give that syllabus other than handing it to them and saying, hey, let's read page 1 together. You were able to turn it into stations or something creative, which is pretty cool. That's a lot better than, I mean, my gosh, sitting there for 30 minutes and reading it to them. Another thing was, you said something about, you know, when other kids see you in the hallway or something, which brings me to a point about being visible. That's a big piece of it, you know, building the relationship piece. This cool you said about writing a letter to yourself. So if you were, we can use this, you know, you talk about, what would you say to yourself if you could go back? You know, you've been, what'd you say, 21 years? If you could go back and give yourself some type of advice as a first-year teacher, like, what would you tell yourself? Knowing what you know now. Good and the bad.
Well, the first thing I would have told me is that everything I learned in college, except for the legality of special ed, everything I learned in college and how to run a classroom, I can just throw out the window. That I'm not going to learn it until I have to go through it. And the only way I learned best by watching other teachers. I learned from other teachers. And I was lucky that I got to co-teach with some great teachers. And that's how I learned to be a teacher, to become a better teacher, other teachers. And I should have never been afraid to ask for other teachers for help. That they are willing to help. There are teachers out there that want to help you. And you just have to seek it out and not be intimidated.
If I could go back, that's one thing you just mentioned on it. Like, I had thought about it a while. Like, the big thing would be find a mentor. One that's, like, not the negative person in the teacher's lounge. You know, everything's, sky's falling every day. But finding a real mentor that's positive and that you feel comfortable with asking for help. That's a big thing. Another thing is just don't be afraid to fail. You can think about my first year in a classroom where you're so worried about what your principals think about you, what's the superintendent going to think, or what's my colleague next door think of how my classroom, is it too loud? Like, just the silly stuff you think about that doesn't really matter. If you don't get anything done that first year other than making sure kids have a safe place to come for 7 hours, I think you've pretty much done your job. That sounds kind of crazy, but we don't know what kids carry in with them. That's what I would go back and tell myself. You don't know what that kid came to class with. You don't know what they carried in from home. And me nitpicking about some silly protocol or procedure or policy or something isn't helping that kid in the long run. It's just me feeling like, oh, I was told to do this, so I have to do it, and never questioning why I'm doing things. I would, if I could go back, I would question more of why we do things the way we do it. Not just because, oh, we've always done it, but really look at what we do and what's best for the kids.
I would have, that was another thing. I would have told myself, discipline-wise, that there was not one way to discipline, that I'm going to have to discipline, because, you know, we're going to have discipline issues, or deal with each student the way they're asking for it.
Every behavior says something. It's asking for something.
And whether it is to pull them aside and talk to them quietly, or if it is to not even give them some time and talk to them later, or deal with them right there. There was no one way of disciplining. You had to meet their needs.
And the only way to know that is to get by to having a relationship with them. After all that matters is if you have a relationship or not.
Well, I know for me, though, the biggest thing, and I've said this 1,000 times, is it's all a relationship piece. So one of the things I would tell myself when my first year teacher would be to enjoy the moment, have fun, make sure kids have fun no matter what I'm teaching, try to draw on their experiences to make the classroom better. When I started teaching, I was still in the Marine Corps Reserve, so my kids were my little soldiers, and if they got out of line, I blew up on them. I
ran a mile.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it worked for me. It got me through the day, but I also left the day every day frustrated because 2 or 3 kids got out of line. I had to yell at them. And it just took another teacher who I coached football with just said one day, like, what are you doing? Like, you're loud. You get angry, and then you go home angry, and you got to find a better way. And it just took him just saying that to me to go the next like 10 straight years without raising my voice in anger in the classroom. Like I just said, this is going to be what I do. Cause the kids aren't going to go home and go, oh, Mr. Lane blew up today. I got to change my life. They'd go home and go.
They resent you for it.
Yeah. Or they talk to their buddies like Coach Lane blew up today and I'm going to get him blow up tomorrow.
Cause so, it's funny. Cause that guy's crazy.
I really took a look at myself and said, hey, this isn't the way I want to go through life. And if I'm going home angry every day, then why did I get involved? So it just took one guy to point out something that was probably painfully obvious for me to change. And I literally feel that way today. So like I'm, even as administrator, I'm out every single day. No one's told me to be outside the front of the school, but I'm outside every day in the front of the school. Fist bumping and high-fiving and talking to kids, find out what happened the night before, who was at the game. It's just part of it. So the biggest thing I would tell myself as a first-year teacher is enjoy the moment, enjoy kids, and give kids a reason to come to school every day because you don't know what kind of baggage they have at home. This might be the only place that they have that's a safe place. And you could be that link. And if they're not enjoying themselves in school and they're not enjoying themselves at home, then they're less likely to come to school. And they're going to find some other avenue that ends up in only a negative place, jail, a coffin, and that's not something I can live with.
And that's what, I mean, I think one thing is to be, education becomes so numbers driven. You know, what were my SOL pass rates or what's our graduation rates and all this stuff that I know it matters. But if we were more people driven and not numbers driven, I think we would see the numbers be better than what they are. Because relationships and education is just a buzzword. I mean, you hear people say it, but if you're not really authentic and genuine and intentional in building those relationships, then we can talk about relationships all we want to talk about. But if you aren't out in front of the school every day, if you're not doing stations every, you know, if you're not taking that time to build the relationships, then it's just us talking about it on a podcast and none of it matters. But you have to actually get out and do it. And you have to enjoy being around kids. I mean, at the end of the day, it's what you're in it for. And that same thing with, like we talked about administrator, the same thing. You have to be willing to get out, be visible, be in the hallway, and get to know your teachers. Every time you walk in a classroom as an administrator shouldn't be this like shock. Like, oh, wow, why is he in here? What did I do wrong? You know, it should be so common that kids are used to seeing you in the classroom. Teachers are used to seeing you in the classroom. And they know you're there to support them and not there just to nitpick about something that you saw the previous day or that a superintendent saw and called and told them to come say something to you, that, you know, they're out in the classroom and they're actually there to support you and help you.
I think you're right. The one thing that I really got out of what you said was about the impact of the numbers. Sure. But the numbers get taken care of themselves through other means. Like, the number's the end goal. You know, we talk about it all the time with, you know, does the data define the kid or the kid define the data? So you look at the kid. Do you look at the number first or you look at the kid first? And I think if you look at the kid first, that explains the data. Then you can figure out how to support the kid. If you just look at the data and then the kid walks in the classroom, oh, you're that kid, then you've already had this negative connotation you put in your head about this kid, and now it's, meh.
Yeah, he don't have a chance, or she don't have a chance.
Or you're less likely to really put forth the effort into supporting it, but you need to find out about the kid, and that will explain the data. And then you help the kid, your numbers come up. You know, it's the same thing we look at discipline. So you look at your discipline numbers, and then you say, okay, well, we've got 20 kids that are causing all these discipline problems. Well, then focus your supports around those 20 kids, and that changes the numbers.
Yeah.
Not the other way around. You know, oh, we got to have all these great big policy changes so we can fix our discipline numbers. No, give the kids that are causing the most discipline problems the supports they need. Then the numbers come down because you've supported those 20 kids.
And because you did it the right way. Because your focus was the kids, not...
Kid first, always. Yeah,
it's always student first. But, and as I mean, like we talked about, that's probably the biggest piece in education that we always hear. If you go to any conference, any webinar, anything you watch, somebody's going to mention something about relationships, but nobody ever mentions what does that look like? And I think we've talked about some of that. You know, it's being in front of the building, it's being out in the hallway between classes, it's getting to know kids in creative ways and having the school day be fun for them.
Relevant academic experience to their lives.
Yeah, what's education to them? If they have a negative view of school, then they're less likely to come to be engaged and they're just tuning out. And they have to be there because they have to be there. And I don't think that's what we want. There's a lot of good things we can do for kids. And, you know, that's at the end of the day, like we've said 1,000 times, I mean, kids are the number one reason we're in this. But you got some things, you know, what's one of the biggest reasons?
You know, what do kids need every single day? They need opportunity. They need to be heard. They need encouragement. They need kindness. And they need consistency. And that's consistency through your discipline. That's consistency through your feedback that you're going to give them. You know, we get stuck on grades all the time. But what they really need is the feedback. And the feedback needs to be genuine. And it's not just a number. The only feedback kids get a lot of times is, I got a 98, or I got a 90, or I got an 80. And it's... That's all they see, and then they're shooting for a grade or they're shooting to learn something. So they need consistency in all those areas, and that's what's going to keep them coming back to school.
Well, the feedback is what growth is about. You don't get growth unless you get feedback. Like, so when Miss Lane gives, you know, if she's doing that writing sample to get to know the students, I'm sure she's just not giving them a grade back that says, hey, you got 85, because that's not correct. It's not correcting anything.
But so many people do.
Oh, it's... A lot of people do. Probably more do than don't. That's kind of part of the problem.
A lot of teachers think the grade is the feedback.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's not. Growth is what, you know, we need to move towards, not just... And it's funny because you get on Twitter and they have this whole no more grade movement, which I don't always agree with the whole, you know, ditching no grades, but I do agree with the part about it should be feedback based and it should be, you know, based on whether they're really learning something and whether they're showing growth over the semester or 9 weeks or however you're measuring it, but there should be some type of growth that's being shown.